शास्त्र विचारणाय कृतनः स धर्म संस्थापकः लोकानां हितकारणं श्रीभुवने मान्यं शरण्याकः राधा कृष्ण पदारविन्द भजनानन्देन मत्सहारिकः मान्ये रूपः सनातन रघुयुग श्रीजीव
respectful obeisances to the six Gosamis of Vrindavan, the Shankar Sai. Srinivasacharya writes in his prayer that they are very expert in scrutinizing and studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. We'll continue reading about Krishna's personality. Remember yesterday we were discussing how Krishna's personality can appear in four ways that are apparently contradictory, but when we understand that Krishna is perfect and complete, then we also understand that all possibilities are there within Krishna, and he displays all possibilities, even those that are apparently contradictory. He displays them all in a perfect and wondrously harmonious and synchronized way, which enthralls the hearts of devotees. That is the main purpose of Krishna's appearance in this world, to enthrall the hearts of the devotees. As you all know, Krishna doesn't have to come to kill the demons. Material nature can take care of that very easily. Pritvanai sadhunam vinashaya shijaskritam. In order to annihilate the miscreants, and pritvanai sadhunam, in order to deliver the sadhus, the devotees, Krishna comes. But why does Krishna have to come to deliver the sadhus, the devotees? Just by the fact that you are a devotee, you're already delivered, because you have devotional service. And certainly, as we said, Krishna doesn't have to come to annihilate the miscreants. So why does he do it when he comes? Because anyone who comes in contact with Krishna, even miscreants who are killed by him, they make spiritual advancement. And also, by the Lord's killing them, he does it in such an extraordinary way that it creates subject matter for the devotees to talk about. So the real purpose of Krishna's appearance is to enliven the devotees so they have ecstatic pastimes of Krishna to discuss. And when devotees discuss the pastimes of Krishna, then they are blissful. Tushyam ticharaman tichar, the Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita. Vajitama gatapana bodhayanta parasparam. When the devotees come together and discuss Krishna, this is very pleasing to the Lord. And the devotees themselves become very pleased and satisfied. More and more as we progress in Krishna consciousness, we should realize the satisfaction that's there simply by talking about Krishna, hearing about Krishna in the society of devotees, in the association of devotees. That's why the association of devotees is so valuable. As we always point out, yes, sometimes it can seem that there are inconveniences. Sometimes it can seem that there are things you have to tolerate. But when you remember what the main purpose is,
of associating with devotees.
That is, hearing about Krishna, discussing Krishna, and impetus to serve Krishna. These things are the fruits of devotee sangha or association. You feel impetus to serve Krishna, and you get to hear about Krishna and talk about Krishna. These things are far more important than any material considerations of incompatibility and different personalities and different styles. The most important thing is the association of devotees affords the opportunity to hear about Krishna and talk about Krishna and inspire one another to serve Krishna. And the Lord becomes satisfied when this happens. In the beginning, when you first come to Krishna consciousness, you may take the association of devotees as a chance to escape the miseries of material existence. And that is correct. There's nothing wrong with that. You want relief. But as you make spiritual advancement, as you become purified, more and more you should begin to realize that the true benefit of the association of devotees is because it gives you the opportunity to hear about Krishna and talk about Krishna. Hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna means Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And it also means talking about Krishna's service. Krishna's service is not different from Krishna. So when you're talking about how to serve Krishna better, you're talking about Krishna. It is a luxury to be around persons who want to talk about Krishna and Krishna's service. It's the greatest benediction in life. So what if sometimes there's inconvenience for the body? Sometimes there's inconvenience for the mind. Naturally, in Kali Yuga, there'll be a few misunderstandings even amongst devotees. But if we keep our minds fixed upon the luxurious benefits, which far outweigh the inconveniences, then we'll have the right attitude. Yesterday we read about the Dhirodhata, personality of Krishna. Can you remember? A Dhirodhata is a person who is naturally very grave, gentle, forgiving, merciful, determined, humble, highly qualified, chivalrous, and physically attractive. Now, today we'll read about Dhira Lalita and the other two. A person is called Dhira Lalita if he is naturally very funny, always in full youthfulness, expert in joking, and free from all anxieties. Such a Dhira Lalita personality is generally found to be domesticated and very submissive to his lover. This Dhira Lalita trait in the personality of Krishna is described by Yajnapatni, the wife of one of the brahmanas who were performing sacrifices in Vrindavan. She tells her friends, now when you hear this, remember, all of Krishna's associates have purely spiritual bodies. There's no matter in Krishna's pastimes. Amongst his intimate associates, they are simply Satchidananda. So Yajnapatni tells her friends, one day, Srimati Radharani, accompanied by her associates, was taking rest in her garden. And at that time, Lord Sri Krishna arrived in that assembly. After sitting down, he began to narrate very impudently about his previous night's pastimes with Radharani. While he was speaking in that way, Radharani became very embarrassed. She was feeling ashamed and was absorbed in thought. And Krishna took the opportunity to mark her breasts with different kinds of tilak. Krishna proved himself to be very expert in that art. In this way, Krishna, as Dira Lalita, was enjoying his youthful proclivities in the company of the gopis. Generally, those who are expert in writing drama choose to call Cupid the ideal Dira Lalita. But we can find more perfectly in the personality of Krishna all the characteristics of Dira Lalita. Yes, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, enjoys his youthful proclivities. Now what happens when you try to enjoy your youthful proclivities? So many problems, so many false hopes, so many frustrations, which scar the rest of your life. But Krishna perfectly enjoys youthful proclivities. Therefore, the name of Krishna is Kishore Shankar, the best of the teenagers. So here you have an example of some of Krishna's youthful proclivities and his teenage behavior. The origin of everything is the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, you must be able to find in the Supreme Absolute Truth the source of everything. You must be able to find romantic behavior and youthful proclivities that must be there in the Supreme Absolute Truth, source of everything. And is there perfectly without any touch of material contamination. This is the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam. It teaches you how everything exists perfectly in the original cause of all causes, Sarvakara. Why should the most intense experience of youthful romance not be there in the Supreme Cause of All Causes? Why should what human beings consider to be the most intoxicating situation, youthful romance, why should that not be there for the Supreme Absolute Truth? We want it for ourselves, but when we hear that Krishna has this perfectly, we become envious. Now it's got to be mythology. But all of you remember your youthful proclivities and your youthful dalliances and alliances, your youthful passion partners. You took it so seriously. You become very insulted if someone dares suggest that your teenage affairs were just not worthy of consideration. Remember when you were teenagers? Especially the ladies, talk about everything so seriously. All the boy-girls' affairs were analyzed endlessly over constant telephone calls. And the men in their way, the young men, they also discuss it. Egotistical way. You listen to men talk. Every man has at least 10 girlfriends, and they're all crazy over him, and he's totally flawless. So we just take it so seriously. But when we hear about Krishna's youthful affairs, his romantic proclivities. Oh, I don't know. That's, maybe that's mythology. Maybe it's the Hindu love god. This bias shows you our contamination of envy. But just think about that. If the absolute truth is that from which everything emanates, janmadiyasyata, then you must also find youthful romance and teenage life in the absolute truth. Now what priest or minister or rabbi is going to be able to explain that to you? The teenage youthful romance activities of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Another name for Shishu Radha Krishna is Shishu Kishore Kishori. Krishna, the teenage boy, Kishore, and Srimati Radharani, the teenage girl, Kishori. The perfect match. In the Supreme Absolute Truth, you find the perfect match, Kishore, Kishori. Dear Prashanta, a person who is very peaceful, forbearing, considerate, and obliging is called Dira Prashanta. This Dira Prashanta trait of Krishna was exhibited in his dealings with the Pandavas. On account of the Pandavas' faithful devotion to the Lord, he agreed to become their charioteer, their advisor, their friend, their messenger, and sometimes their bodyguard. Such is an example of the result of devotional service toward Vishnu. When Krishna was speaking to Maharaj Yudhisthira about religious principles, he demonstrated himself to be a great learned scholar. But because he accepted the position of a younger cousin to Yudhisthira, he was speaking in a very gentle tone which enhanced his beautiful bodily features. The movements of his eyes and the mode of his speech proved that he was very, very expert in giving moral instructions. Sometimes Maharaj Yudhisthira is also accepted by learned scholars as Dira Prashanta. So you can think of the beauty of Krishna. How is it that someone can speak in such a way that their bodily features are, the beauty of their bodily features is enhanced just by their way of speaking? Think about that. He was speaking in a very gentle tone, which enhanced his beautiful bodily features. Were you ever curious about this? Try it. You can practice in the mirror. Speak in a very beautiful tone that will enhance your bodily features. See if you can do it. Krishna knows all these arts. He knows how to charm. He was very, very expert in giving moral instruction. There's an art to everything. Well, certainly there's an art to how to give moral instruction. Generally we think that giving moral instruction means you kind of get up on a high horse and, you know, you should do this, you should do that, because such and such a reason. Isn't it great fun to correct another devotee? Prabhu, Prabhu! You should be doing it this way. Prabhu, Prabhu! So often we forget Prabhu means master. Hey, Prabhu! You should be doing like this. But there is an art. If you want to give moral instruction, there's an art how to do it. There's an art for everything, and Krishna knows that art for everything. Because Krishna knows how to do everything perfectly, he knows the art of how to perform everything, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Alright, the fourth personality type of Krishna is Dhirojadatta. A person who is very envious, proud, easily angered, restless, and complacent is called Dhirojadatta by learned scholars. Such qualities were visible in the character of Lord Krishna, because when he was writing a letter to Kaliram, Krishna addressed him as a sinful frog. Yeah. Ever tried that sometime? Call someone a sinful frog. In his letter, Krishna advised Kaliyaman that he should immediately go and find some dark well for his residence, because there was a black snake named Krishna who was very eager to devour all such sinful frogs. Krishna reminded Kaliyaman that he could turn all the universes to ashes simply by looking at them. So yes, in the Supreme Absolute Truth you'll find the ability to threaten. Beware, by my glance, I can turn all universes to ashes. Krishna doesn't make idle talk. He can actually do that. The above statement by Krishna seems apparently to be of an envious nature. But according to different pastimes, places, and times, this quality is accepted as a great characteristic. This is God. He can talk like this, and we accept it as a great trait. Go find the dark well to live in, he cries. This black snake loves to devour sinful frogs like you. When Krishna talks to them, devotees worship him. Krishna's Dhirojadatta qualities have been accepted as great because Krishna uses them only to protect his devotees. In other words, even undesirable traits may also be used in the exchange of devotional service. Sometimes Bhima, the second brother of the Pandavas, is also described as Dhirojadatta. Once, while fighting with a demon who was appearing as a deer, Krishna challenged him in this way. I have come before you as a great elephant named Krishna. You must leave the battlefield accepting defeat, or else there is death awaiting you. This challenging spirit of Krishna's is not contradictory to his sublime character, because he is the supreme being. Everything is possible in his character. This is what we have to understand. Everything is possible in Krishna's character. From teenage romance to apparent envy of opponents. There's a nice statement in the Karma Purana about these contradictory traits of the Supreme Personality of God. It is stated there that the Supreme Person is neither very fat nor very thin. He is always transcendental to material qualities, and yet his bodily luster is blackish. His eyes are reddish. He's all-powerful, and he's equipped with all different kinds of opulences. Contradictory traits in Krishna's persons are not at all surprising. So are you surprised to hear these apparently contradictory traits? Generally, people like to think, oh, God is good, or God is peace, or God is love. God gives, or God destroys. But here you get the understanding about how the Lord is full of all different qualities, even apparently those that are contradictory. But when Krishna displays these qualities, you see there's no contradiction. Everything the Lord does is perfectly harmonized and balanced. In the Mahavaraha Purana, it is confirmed that the transcendental bodies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His expansions are all existing eternally. Such bodies are never material. They are completely spiritual and full of knowledge. They are reservoirs of all transcendental qualities. In the Vishnu Yamala Tantra, there is a statement that because the Personality of Godhead and His expanded bodies are always full of knowledge, bliss, and eternity, they're always free from the 18 kinds of material contaminations. If you want to know the truth about your material existence, which is lived through your material body, then just analyze the list of the 18 material contaminations and see how you measure up. You want to know what is the real truth of the body. Chemically, physically, you can't know what is the real truth of the body. You just get a razor blade, make a little slit, peel back some skin and muscle, you see the real truth of the body. Krishna's body, however, is always spiritual. Material body means not only flesh, blood, bone, and fat, but also the material contaminations manifest in a form of supple matter. The gross matter is the flesh, bone, blood, and fat. But then, what about the subtle matter, which is also the contamination? Those 18 material contaminations are illusion, fatigue, errors, roughness, material lust, restlessness, pride, envy, violence, disgrace, exhaustion, untruth, anger, hankering, dependence, desire to lord over the universe, seeing duality, and cheating. Regarding all the above statements, it is understood that the Mahavishnu is the source of all incarnations in the material world. But, because of his greater extraordinary opulence, we can understand that the son of Nanda Maharaj is the source of Mahavishnu also. You see, Mahavishnu, lying on the Karna ocean and breathing out the universes. They come out of pores of the skin, out of the nostril. That Mahavishnu is the gateway for the incarnations of the Lord to appear in the material world. They come through Mahavishnu. Now, if you say that, well, does that mean Krishna and Balaram also appear through Mahavishnu? Krishna and Balaram, they are from what Mahavishnu expands. So some people get confused by that. Okay, if Mahavishnu is a gateway of all incarnations in this world, that means Krishna must come from Mahavishnu. No, you can have a door to this room and you're here and then you walk through the door into another room. So that doesn't mean the door is there first just because you walk through it. You just made use of the door to go somewhere. Similarly, Krishna can make use of his expansion, Mahavishnu, to go somewhere. This is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, where it is stated, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Govinda, whose partial representation is the Mahavishnu. The gigantic form of the Mahavishnu is the source of generation for innumerable universes. Innumerable universes are coming out of his exhaling breath, and the same universes are going back with his inhaling breath. This Mahavishnu is also a planetary portion of a portion of Krishna. Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality Godhead, has greater wealth in terms of sweeter, more personal, loving exchanges. What are the four qualities that Krishna does not share with Lord Narayan and incarnations, Lord Brahma, and so on and so forth? His flute playing is being surrounded by loving devotees. His beauty. What else? Yes, very nectarian, unparalleled pastimes. You know the Leela when Krishna and Arjuna went to see Mahavishnu? It so happened that a Brahmana and his wife were having a family, but as soon as the baby was born, the baby would die. As we've explained several times, the Brahmana knew this is an aberration, this is totally abnormal. In a proper government, in a country that's properly ruled, governed, this shouldn't happen. The fault must be the king's. This is how much more high-grade civilization was at the time. If there was some natural disaster, if there was some calamity, which was just out of the blue or not, just out of the norm, then people would accuse the government. The government must be not correct. The government must be corrupt. Otherwise such abnormalities wouldn't happen. You can see these days how some governments try to avoid the global warming controversy. Nah, it's not really so, nothing to worry about. Okay, so we had a real hot summer last time. They don't want to accept any responsibility for anything. But you can see in this Krishna Leela, the Brahmana, when his baby died in childbirth, he immediately knew what to do. It's unnatural that a son dies before the father. Therefore, there must be governmental corruption. Could you go to your local council and get that point? No, people think you're crazy. What do the two have to do with each other? So anyway, nine times this happened. Nine newborn children of this Brahmana couple died on childbirth. Before the tenth time, Arjuna vowed to do something about it. He said, if I can't protect your next child, I'll interfere and finish myself off. So the Brahmin said, all right. So he and his wife cooked up number 10 and when number 10 appeared, the baby started crying and then disappeared. Arjuna, we have to search everywhere. Not only the earth planet, but with his mystic power, he searched other realms, including the abode of Yamaraj, but he couldn't find the child. So then, Arjuna was left as with the only recourse of having to keep his promise. He had promised, if he cannot save the Brahmana's child, then he'll enter into fire. So he prepared to do that, to enter into fire. But right before he did that, Krishna stopped him. Krishna said, come with me. I know where the children are. So he and Arjuna traveled. They traversed the entire material universe. Went through the coverings that are around each universe. And emerged into the Brahma Jyoti, which cannot be seen from within the material universe. So they were outside of the material universe. Seeing the Karna ocean, seeing the bright light of the Brahma Jyoti. And then Arjuna saw a palace. He saw the bed of Ananta Shesh. And on that bed, Ananta Shesh, he saw Mahavishnu reclining. So what did Krishna and Arjuna do upon seeing Mahavishnu? They joined their palms together. Krishna also. That's why Krishna is offering respects to himself. It's like the Lord worshipped Govardhan Hill. His worship of Govardhan Hill means he was worshipping himself, in that Govardhan Hill is not different from Krishna. So here's Arjuna, here's Krishna, they're meeting Mahavishnu, who's reclining on the cause of ocean. So maybe Krishna offers his respects. Why? He's playing the part of a human being. When you say Krishna's a chuta, infallible, that doesn't simply mean he makes no mistake in the ordinary sense. To be a chuta, to be infallible, means the Lord never jeopardizes the smooth functioning of his intimate pastimes as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He protects his abilities for acting apparently as an ordinary young boy. So therefore, when Krishna saw Mahavishnu, Krishna offered pranams. And Mahavishnu began to speak. Mahavishnu was smiling that I'm going to have to speak in such a way to bewilder Arjuna. I'm going to have to speak in such a way that Arjuna thinks that I, Mahavishnu, am the source of Krishna and everyone. I am the source of Krishna. When actually, of course, I am an expansion of Krishna. Krishna is the source. Anyway, the plan of this scene is that I speak some words to Arjuna, saying that Arjuna and Krishna are his expansions, Mahavishnu's expansions. But actually, I'll also at the same time, in a disguised way, in a clever way, I'll say some words so that the real truth comes out. Krishna is the master of all opulences. He's the master of me also. So, while Krishna and Balaram were before Mahavishnu with folded hands, Mahavishnu said, I've been waiting for a sight of you. He's telling that to Krishna. I've been waiting just to get a glimpse of you. That's why I took the Brahmana boy. That's That's the only reason. I just wanted to get a glimpse of you. So, Mahavishnu turned over all the boys that had evidently died, but actually they were taken away by Mahavishnu. He turned them over, and Krishna and Balaram took them back inside the material universe. And then when Arjuna got home, he was just thinking, wow, amazing how great Krishna is. He gave me the power to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu. Amazing. Krishna allowed me to see the root cause of all causes, Mahavishnu. But then after a while, we had to think, wait a minute, let's go over this again. Why was Mahavishnu saying to Krishna that I've been waiting to see you? I wanted this opportunity to see you. Therefore, I took away the Brahmana's boys. It must be that Krishna is superior to even Mahavishnu. So, Arjuna, think very deeply about this. Why did it happen like this? Mahavishnu taking these Brahmana boys. So Arjuna began to consider. Well, no ordinary person could touch a Brahmana in Dwarka. So I guess Mahavishnu had to do something like that himself. In order to induce Krishna to let him see him. But he wanted, Arjuna was thinking, if Mahavishnu wanted to see Krishna, why didn't he go to Dwarka and see Krishna? Then Arjuna thought, it's just not anyone who can pop into Dwarka and see Krishna. So obviously, Mahavishnu had to take that into account. Not that anyone could show up at Dwarka and hit Krishna's Dwarka. What more? Arjuna began to think. Why did Mahavishnu himself take the boys of the Brahmana? Well, it would not be possible for any other entity to take the boys, the Brahmana boys in Dwarka. So Mahavishnu had to arrange himself for that. So finally Arjuna concluded that in order to get the darshan of Lord Krishna, Mahavishnu arranged that the Brahmana's boys would disappear. Because he knew, Mahavishnu knew, if I take those boys, Krishna will come to me, and then I'll be able to see him. But the final conclusion is more than that. Actually, Krishna did not come to see Mahavishnu simply to get the so-called dead sons of the Brahmana back. If that was the only reason, then what? Krishna would have done that upon the disappearance of the first Brahmana's baby. The Brahmana's first baby. Why did he wait till after 9 and 10? If Krishna was really concerned, it's because of these disappearing boys of the Brahmana. He would have done something after the first disappearance. But no, he waited till 9, 10. There must be another motive. That motive is, when Arjuna said, I'm going to enter the fire, then Krishna did something because of Arjuna, because of his relationship with Arjuna. So these are some of the mysteries of Krishna's appearance in this world. just like he offered respects to Govardhan Hill. Even though Govardhan Hill is his expansion, similarly Krishna offers his respects to Mahavishnu, even though Mahavishnu is expansion of Krishna. In this way, Krishna always maintains his integrity as a youthful teenage boy. So with folded palms, Krishna Arjuna, they offer their respects to Mahavishnu.
Oh, here is God.
Krishna's offering respects like that. Here is God. Because he wants to maintain the sweetness of his human-like pastimes. All right, any questions? In the second canto, it's more important that you build a foundation without plunging first to the Lord's pastimes. That's why you read the Bhagavatam in sequence. But even if you just read Krishna book, because Srila Prabhupada has couched the Krishna pastimes in Krishna book in the proper way, even a neophyte can read the Krishna book and benefit. Known as Arun Lochan, eyes as red as the rising sun. It's part of beauty. Complexion like a dark rain cloud, eyes red like the rising sun. Beauty. That would color your eyes.
Which part of the eye are red? Which part of the eyes are red?
Inside?
Yeah.
Iris. Krishna's eyes are tinged red. Is pleasure.
Is there any other reason?
In your wild days, did you ever have a water bed? Huh? Why?
It's fun.
How?
It's starting to
melt. Yeah, it's cooling, right? So, Krishna, he's reclining on Ananta Shesh, the cool body of snakes. Snakes have cool bodies. And he's floating on the Karna ocean. It's fun.
You can do lots of things out of fun. You can have fun in lots of ways.
And Krishna has fun in unlimited ways. And while he's lying on Ananta Shesh, floating on the causal ocean, universes are coming out of his pores. Pleasure. That's Mahavishnu, expansion of expansion, expansion of Krishna. In Vrindavan, the original personality has other kinds of pastime. Doesn't bother, the universe is coming out of its pores. At night, he goes to his girlfriend's houses and makes funny sounds outside their door so they know, come to the bars, come to the bars. That's God. But as an expansion of expansion of expansion, Mahavishnu is lying on the Karnas, breathing out universes, breathing universes. What? You can be there one day in Vrindavan at night. Near Krishna making funny sounds, alerting his girlfriends, come to the bars. And you? What's that mean?
So this question is in the fourth dimension stage, Turiya. This is just the stage. The Krishna or his expansion is also on that level.
And living entities in their constitutional position, they're also doing that. But just because the living entities and Krishna are on the Turiya platform doesn't mean they're equal in every respect. Alright. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.